Welcome to Therapeutic Intentions Podcast. My name is Stephanie Dingbaum. I am a mental health therapist, and I am so passionate about all things health and wellness, personal development, and empowering others to be their most authentic and best versions of themselves. Here at Therapeutic Intentions, we are all about having intentional and authentic conversations on whole body health, healing practices, mindset, and ways to uplevel your life so you can truly be the best version of you. If you are a woman, a mom, hope to someday be a mom, a healer, or just in a place where you want to start prioritizing yourself and your health, then this podcast is for you. I am so glad you're here. If you're ready, let's get to it. Thanks for being here, and welcome back to Therapeutic Intentions Podcast. I have had a few requests to share a story of mine, an experience that I had a few years back, and so that's what today's episode is going to be about. And this story can get a little lengthy depending how much detail I go into, and so yeah. There may be a part one and a part two, but I'll make sure they both get published in the same week so I don't have to leave you hanging for too long. Though, truth be told, I do like the idea of a cliffhanger. That kind of keeps you wanting more. So we'll see. We'll see what I end up doing. I'm sharing a story with you today, a very personal story, but that's why I'm doing the podcast. I want you guys to know me personally. I feel that I have a lot to share. I feel that people can learn a lot from me and my stories and my perspective on my lived experiences. And so that's another part of being a podcaster, is sharing those deep and personal experiences with listeners in hopes that you can learn something and apply it to your own life. And so here I am. I'm going to share this story that happened to me back in 2016. Again, this has been something that people have been encouraging me to share, and I'm an open book, to be completely honest, so I have no problem talking about this, though I do know some people in my life, like my husband and sometimes my mom, have a hard time hearing this story, but it's just because they witnessed it, and I, unfortunately, or actually fortunately, I don't have any or much memory of this event in my life, so I honestly have no problem talking about it. So I'm going to share a story with you today about an event in my life, like I said, back in 2016. This event had a huge, huge impact on my spiritual health, and many, many miracles, or I like to call them synchronicities. I think they're both the same word, to be honest with you, but many, many miracles that came out of this traumatic event in my life, and I think there's a lot that people can take from it. So just to give you some background information, in August of 2015, I had made the decision to join the water ski team here in Delaware County. I had no previous experience water skiing. However, I loved water, loved being on the water, loved being in the water, loved summer, warm weather. So the idea of being on this water ski team was very attractive to me, just knowing that I could be at practices in the warm weather and being in the water, being around others who loved the water. I was very active at that point in my life, was very into working out and just another way to continue to work my body. So it was really like the idea of joining was like a win-win to me. I had a few friends on the team. I just thought this was the best thing for me at this point in my life. I was single and didn't really have anything holding me back. So I had made the decision to join the ski team in August of 2015. And that was actually near the end of that ski season. So I really didn't play much of an active role at that point in time. However, I continued to stay on the team, started going to winter practices in January of 2016, where we practice at a indoor pool here in Delaware County. And just in the pool, we pretty much just practice stacking pyramids and climbing pyramids and just different things like that, that things that we can do in the pool at least. So it was during that winter that I just got myself more and more comfortable with climbing the pyramids and different things like that. That way, when summer hit of 2016, I would be able to immediately start doing those tricks. And so as winter came to an end and summer got closer, we then transitioned our practices to this pond. I think it's a pond, it's not a lake. Anyways, this pond here in Delaware County, it's called Tram Park, and the ski team holds their practices there. And so in May, we had transitioned to Tram Park for practices. And again, since I joined so late in 2015, I really didn't have that much experience with like the ski shows or anything like that. So I was just so pumped to finally be a part of this team and be able to help put a show on. It was perfect for me, honestly. And I was in a few shows early on that summer, and I was in a few water acts for the show. And it was early on that summer that I was asked to be a part of one of the opening water acts for the show that year. And it was a water act I hadn't done before, but again, I was new to the team, so I was willing to learn these new tricks, and I honestly had no reason not to. And so they asked me to be a part of this opening water act. It was called the Barefoot Pyramid. And so for those of you who are not familiar with water skiing, the Barefoot Pyramid is just there's two people on the bottom and then one person on the top. And the two people on the bottom, they start out in skis, and then as the boat gets to a certain speed, the two bottom skiers jump out of their skis so that they're literally skiing barefoot on the water. And then the person on the top, it just makes a pyramid. And so then when you get in front of the crowd, you're supposed to like jump off into the water. And anyways, it looks really cool. It's a really neat act that they do. And so I was asked to be on that pyramid for it was going to be our opener for the show that summer. I was super excited. I had done it a few times in like practices, and then I did it in our first show that summer and some of our like dress rehearsals. So I had felt like I was pretty comfortable with it. I mean, honestly, it always had me so nervous just because the boat is going faster than like a normal pyramid. And so I just always would get nervous doing this. Also because it was like the opener. I don't know. I would just always get so nervous about it. But anyways, the show that was held on Sunday, July 24th of that summer, was no different than any other show. The show was set to start at 2 o'clock. We typically would get there early to get like our costumes all ready and get whatever tools we needed for our water acts, things like that, get the props and everything set up for the show, things like that. This was a show that I was super excited about because I had literally invited a ton of my family members and friends, and like I had my family, and then at that time, my boyfriend, who's now my husband, his family was all there to see me perform. A lot of friends of ours, family friends. So there's quite a few people there that I had invited. So I was just really excited to finally show off for them like these new tricks that I had learned. So it was a special show for me. Well, like I said, the Water Act, the Barefoot Pyramid, I was the opening act for this show. And quite honestly, the last thing I remember of this show is the boat taking me and the two guys who were the base of the Barefoot Pyramid, taking us out to a certain spot in the water where we started. And we climbed out of the boat and we were getting in the water and getting our ropes all ready. And the guy who I ride with out there was like, I remember him asking me, like, are you ready? And I remember telling him, like, I thought my stomach was gonna like fall out of my butt or something. Like, I just was so nervous. And we were holding on to the ropes and the boat starts going. And it's, like I said, it's supposed to get up to a certain speed. And once it does, or as it's increasing its speed, I was to climb with my feet on top of the two guys' shoulders to make that pyramid. And then as we're nearing the crowd, I'm supposed to jump off. Well, I remember going around the first corner of the pond and the boat's continuing to speed up. I remember going around the second corner of the pond and the boat's speeding up. And then I honestly, like, the last thing I remember is the guy under me losing his footing, and then I don't remember anything else at that point. So what had happened, and at this point forward, I'm really just telling you things mainly that had been told to me, but what had happened is when the guy under me had lost his footing, that made me go back and quite literally do like a backflip, and I had hit the water. Well, the impact of me hitting the water had literally like snapped my neck back. And so, the last thing I remember was that. And from memories that others have told me who witnessed it, I was literally just floating in the water. Nobody knew what was wrong at that point in time. My now husband, who was then my boyfriend, said he knew instantly that something was wrong. He said I was floating in the water with my head down, and he knew something was wrong instantly. And I think it was his sister, who is now my sister-in-law, told, like, called 911. Once the ambulance got out there, I was put into the back of the ambulance. And we have a hospital locally here in Delaware County, and I really don't remember that very much. Like, it's super, super fuzzy in my mind. But I was taken to the local hospital, and even the memories there are very fuzzy. I really don't remember much. I remember my wetsuit being cut off of me. I remember hearing things like conversation around me about the potential of paralysis. I remember hearing that, and then hearing probably like a doctor or somebody say that it could be worse. But at that point in time, I was just in and out of it. Like, I don't remember much of it. And so then my family was told that I was going to need to be airlifted to Iowa City right away because of this concern with potential paralysis or worse. And it didn't take long, and I was being brought up to the top floor of the hospital, and there was a helicopter on the roof. We went out onto the roof and I was put onto the helicopter. And it was about that time when I felt like I started to gain more awareness as to like my surroundings. I definitely remember like conversing with the flight nurse that was on board with me. Her name's Michelle. Shout out to Michelle. She's amazing. I still keep in touch with her today. Just love that woman. Grateful for her. And Michelle tried to keep me occupied. I mean, literally, it was just like a 15-minute flight, and they were flying me to the University of Iowa Hospital, which was an hour and a half away from Manchester, where I was at. But it was like a 15-minute flight. Went really fast, I felt like. And Michelle tried to keep me occupied by like taking pictures or video on her phone and showing me these pictures. So that was really awesome of her. And like I said, before I knew it, we were We were at the ER at the University of Iowa Hospital. I immediately, once we got into the ER, this was a really weird synchronicity or miracle that happened. I was wheeled into the ER and there was just a ton of med students, doctors, nurses, just all around me. I mean, it was overwhelming to say the least. And out of everybody in there, I recognized one of the nurses. And so to kind of give you some background information, I was in a car accident in college, which was 6 or 7 years prior to this. Anyways, me and my roommate were in a car accident in college on my way home from visiting my mom, and we hit a deer and it sent us into the ditch, and the car like went from 65 to zero. Like it was really scary. My roommate was somehow calm through this whole thing, and I was just a wreck. I mean, I could not control myself. And the EMT that showed up, his name was Ben, and he was talking to my roommate Meg, like, how are we gonna calm her down type of thing. And she noticed he had a dog in his car, and she was like, well, she loves dogs. And so Ben introduced Meg and I to his dog, Medic, and that just helped to calm me in that moment. Anyways, I kept in touch with Ben sporadically, well, that he was there the night of that car accident. And so like Meg and I sent him thank you cards, and I just stayed in touch with him via like social media and things like that. So back to being in the ER at the University of Iowa, I recognized one person in the ER when I got in there, and it was Ben. 6 or 7 years later, he was in the ER the day I happened to have this traumatic accident. And it was like all my fears in that moment just dissipated and went away, seeing a familiar face. And so anyways, from that point, there was just, it was a big blur. I had a lot of tests done on me. I had a lot of x-rays done, some CT scans, just a bunch of different tests and whatnot. And then after all of the tests, I was put into a hospital room. My family were all there. My boyfriend at the time, Mitch, his whole family was there. But honestly, I was just really in and out of it. I remember getting sick at one point in time, and I was just so exhausted from everything that my eyes were open 1 minute and shut the next. I was just literally in and out of it. And then the tests came back, and they had confirmed what had happened. I had fractured my C2 vertebrae. And so your C2 vertebrae is the vertebrae directly under the brain stem. And that vertebrae had cracked. And so they had told my family that I was going to be in a neck brace for the foreseeable future. And it was still undetermined if I was going to need surgery at some point in time. That really was going to be determined by whether or not my neck healed on its own or not over time. And so that night, it was my mom and I and my boyfriend, Mitch. We all slept in the hospital room that night. But truth be told, I really didn't get much sleep. You know, having a neck brace on and being in pain and not wanting to move a ton, I mean, I still had a lot of fear that what if I moved and messed something up? So I literally could only lay on my back and could only look up. I couldn't look down. And so it's just really uncomfortable. I couldn't sleep very well. It was just really hard to let myself fall asleep, partly because of the discomfort, because I'm not a back sleeper. And then the other part, just because there was still so much fear I felt I was holding on to, just not really being aware of just how bad things were, and was I gonna be okay? Or, you know, I still was needing a lot of answers, and I felt like I didn't have them all yet. And so that night, I really didn't get much sleep. I think, honestly, I remember telling my mom, I think I got like maybe 1 or 2 hours of sleep that night. Plus, like, the nurses were coming in periodically throughout the night to check on me. So, I mean, just really didn't get much sleep. And with laying in one position, I mean, it's understandable. But I just kept telling myself throughout the night, at least I'm not paralyzed. I kept, from the moment I was put into the ambulance at Schramm Park to that night, numerous times, I was being told, wiggle your toes, wiggle your fingers, wiggle your arms, wiggle your toes, wiggle your fingers, wiggle your arms, over and over and over again, just to make sure I still had feeling. And so throughout the night when I couldn't sleep, I just kept telling myself, at least I'm not paralyzed. At least I can still move. And I would wiggle my toes and wiggle my fingers even when nobody was around to kind of like relieve that fear inside of me. So the next day, it was Monday, and the doctor comes in really early, like I think it was 5 a.m. Of course, at that time, Mitch was not in the room. He was in the waiting room. He couldn't sleep very well in the hospital room, so he went to sleep in the waiting room. Of course, my mom had gone to the waiting room to get him. So, of course, that was the moment that the doctor came in with an update. And again, like, I was pretty groggy, didn't get much sleep. And I'm trying to understand what the doctor is telling me. And it was just a lot of, like, medical verbiage I really didn't understand. But he was explaining just how bad my neck was. And it was a quick visit. And he asked if I had questions, and I didn't. And I wasn't really prepared, you know. And then he left. And my mom and Mitch come back into the room, and they're like, oh, the doctor came in, like, what did he say? And I can't remember anything that he said, and I'm trying to reiterate what I can, but I'm not remembering much, and I just feel bad because they wanted to know what he was going to share, and I couldn't share anything. And as the morning goes on, they end up getting updates from the nursing staff and everything. And honestly, the nursing staff were just amazing. I mean, just so patient, so understanding. They made that stay a little easier on me. So really grateful for them through that whole journey as well. Later on, as Monday went on, they really wanted me to try walking, try getting up out of bed. These were things that I was told I wouldn't be able to do on my own, and that wouldn't come easily, which is so weird because it's just stuff that you take for granted, right? Walking, steps, going to the bathroom, those are all things that you just take for granted. And I couldn't anymore. I couldn't do any of them by myself anymore. So the first hurdle they wanted me to attempt was trying to get out of bed on my own. This was not an easy task, especially since I had the neck fracture happened less than 24 hours prior to this. The physical therapist that came into my room said that if I couldn't get out of the bed on my own, then I would not be discharged. And honestly, I was like, I don't care if I'm discharged or not. I just want to give myself time to heal. I don't want to rush it. You know, there's a lot of fear still with, like, what if I rush it and then I'm back at square one and make it worse? And, you know, there's all those fears that you're holding on to. So my family that were all there really encouraged me to attempt to try to get out of bed. So I did. I tried several times. And each of those times I was in excruciating pain. It just was not coming easily. I just didn't have the muscle strength to do it. And when I pushed it, my neck was in pain. It hurt. And so with all of these attempts, I'm on the bed and I'm sobbing due to the pain. And I kept being encouraged by the staff, like, you can do this, keep trying. And the pain was just too much to bear. And I just couldn't do it. And there's several times in that moment where both Mitch and my mom had to walk out of the room because it was just too hard for them seeing me in pain. And so after several attempts and PT seeing just how hard it was on me, they agreed to still discharge me, but they put in the discharge paperwork that the only way they would discharge me is if my family could guarantee that somebody was going to be in the room with me to help me get up at all times of the day. And so my family agreed to that. But I had to relearn a lot. Like I said, those things that you just take for granted, I couldn't just do them automatically. And I couldn't do them on my own. So for example, walking, I couldn't just simply, even in a chair, once I, with help, I did eventually get out of the bed. And then I sat myself down in a chair with the help of the people in the room. But even just simply standing up and getting out of a chair, I couldn't do that. I couldn't walk by myself. I couldn't do stairs by myself. I couldn't go to the bathroom on my own. These were things that my body knew how to do them, but it was almost like I had to relearn them. So in the hours that Monday morning with PT there, we took the journey of walking down the hall and back, of course, with help. They wanted me to attempt to do at least 2 steps of stairs. So I did that slowly but surely. And then they wanted to see if I could, with help, get myself to the bathroom and back. And I couldn't do that by myself. That was a very humbling experience, to say the least. So all of these things, they just needed to witness me attempting and showing that I could do it successfully. And I will say one miracle was when we were told later that morning or early that afternoon, I can't remember, I was told that I was going to be discharged that day. And I mean, they had thrown the words discharge around throughout Monday morning, but I didn't believe it, honestly. I felt still so bad that I just thought, there's no way they're going to discharge me. It was just yesterday that I broke my neck. There's no way. So when the discharge staff came in and told me that they were going to be discharging me, I was in awe. And my family that were there were like, wow. It was almost like when I actually was discharged, it was exactly 23 hours after I had broken my neck at Tram Park. And it just seemed unheard of after such a traumatic event that it would happen that quickly. It just, the whole thing just kind of amazed me, still does to this day. The whole event, just all of it, all the parts of it, just seemed like a gift from God. Just a miracle that even I couldn't wrap my head around. And yes, it could have been worse. Yes, I could have been paralyzed. Yes, I could have died. And we don't always know why things end up the way they do, but I always go back to, it's not our job to understand or know why. We always question, like, why do bad things happen to good people, or why does suffering happen? But it's not our job to understand. It's not our job to know why. I truly believe it's just our job to praise God through the good and the bad. I know that's not easy. I know that that takes a lot of power to do, especially during the bad. Of course, it's easy during the good, but during the bad, to find reasons to praise God. But that's what I did. During the pain, during the sleepless nights, I praised God that it wasn't worse. I praised God that at least I was still able to move my body, even though there was some pain. I praised God that I didn't need surgery. And I think that's what we're called to do. I'm gonna stop here. Stay tuned for part 2, and I will continue to share some takeaways from this event in my life that I believe you can really benefit from. Thank you so much for listening to us. It means so much to me. If there were any aha moments or anything that really resonated with you on today's episode, then please take a minute and share it on your social media and tag me so I can personally thank you. Also, if you could, please rate and review the podcast, as it is new and that really helps to get the word out there more and reach even more listeners. I'll catch you on the next episode.